Doing all right. You're starting to pick up that radio DJ vibe where you start talking over the, because
Well,
now it fades out and you're talking into the intro.
I cut it the other day. I had a little bit of time before our last recording, and I'm like, you know what? I'm tired of having to remember exactly when to hit fade, and then I don't. So I did the editing in the app, and I got it to where it fades right after that last drum hits that you love so much. And I have it fade enough that if I'm smart, I can actually start talking over the music as it tails out. I know there are other podcasts that let it like sit at a very low volume for the first minute or two, and I'm like, I don't want to copy your
Yeah.
thunder. So I figured you'd like it. I want to get a little bit more professional. I want people to actually think we know what we're doing. But I guess I just told them we didn't. So I should probably cut that out. I'm not going
We're
to, but it sounds good.
like, you and I are like 30 episodes in at this point. I mean, people know
I
we don't know
know,
what we're
I know.
doing,
We know. We're
but
almost getting to the point where we get to do a year-end recap. That's crazy.
oh yeah.
It is crazy.
But
But anyways.
I have to say though, because I mean, you're really embracing the whole radio DJ. So nobody else can see this, but John has the mic that hangs down, you know, and it's the end firing. He's got his headphones on and one headphone's off so he can, you know, hear from both.
Well, I
So
have so if I put the if I put the if I put both ear cups on, it just echoes the way the audio is set up and the recording is set up. I hear both. This is easier than figuring out how to fix the feeds in the computer because everything else is fine and I don't want to break it. And I have to do this because my desk is so small I can't do anything else. I have a very limited space. So
you
there's
know,
my behind the curtains, if you will.
I think you hit the nail on the head because you know you said you're just too lazy to figure it out, so you come up with a workaround. That could be like the tagline for this show sometimes, you know. We're just
Engineering
so
101, man. I could get like X, Y, and Z and weld it together, or I could do duct tape and just hope it stays a little apart together long enough, right?
you know, and I think that's why we have today's guest on is because you know, we're still trying to learn stuff, and it's easier to just have somebody come on and like explain stuff to us than actually us, you know, you and me have to like go read standards and like technical documents because that's just work.
I really do have to take issue with this because I didn't realize until today that this was actually a ruse to get me to learn stuff. I'm offended.
Did I thought we told you that like a year ago, man.
Oh, maybe I didn't. I didn't read the memo. Anyways.
Goes back to the not reading part.
If it's not in the first two lines of the email, to quote a former coworker of ours, I don't read it. Anyways, shall we
So now,
introduce our guest?
well, yeah, somebody's got to do some intelligent talking here. We might as well bring Sean in. So today we have one of our PSEs, Sean Hogston. So Sean, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Nice.
Why don't you take a second
What's
and introduce yourself, the people who maybe don't know you.
up? Yeah, all right. So Sean Hogson, I am a PSE for North America. My specialization is around the multi-radio access technologies. So things like, IoT and CBRS and how all that stuff, integrates in together with Wi-Fi and we deliver those as a kind of a solution. So I've been doing this for quite a while, several years. So yeah, glad to be here and chat with you guys.
So asking for me, what's a PSE?
Principal systems engineer or principal sales engineer or however you that S kind of means a little bit different thing. So basically we are I hate using the term subject matter experts. But it's more like we're the guys that the field escalates to help figure things out. So it may not be that we have the answer that they're looking for, but we're generally the ones that will find that answer or put multiple pieces together. So like under the multi-radio access stuff, it's not necessarily that, I have everything figured out under IoT or every little detail of CBRS, but I put all those pieces together and how you make those things fit. So we're kind of like the fixers that they'll send in to help when things go wrong or when, big deal, pre-sales, big deal type of stuff, right? That's where we get involved to bridge usually multiple groups together.
All
Makes
righty.
sense. So since you just gave us that perfect segue, your job, you said, is to help customers and partners and other sales engineers or systems engineers understand the products and the solutions and the technology. So we've got a big one coming up, right? Wi-Fi 7 is knocking on the door, if you will. And we get to do with this. We're going to, everything's coming, right? This is the next few months is going to be a lot of announcements, and 2024 is going to be a whole lot of busy because everybody's going to be excited. So what does this mean to your day-to-day work? And then ultimately from that, like what kind of experience can you share? Like, what are we looking forward to the next, the next coming months?
It's going to be the movie Groundhog Day on a daily basis, probably. So, and what I mean for that is, you know, with a new technology, you know, it depends on the level of investment that the, you know, like we'll just use our partners for instance. I reference Groundhog Day because we're going to get that continual question of, you know, what's new in Wi-Fi 7? Do I need to upgrade? Everybody's going to be coming back asking that same question again. So honestly, as that comes out, it's really just educating everybody. You know, things like this with the podcasts, announcements, obviously, that we'll do, and doing webinars and all the normal things you do for new products, whether they're, you know, and obviously, you know, Wi-Fi 7 is not a new thing from us. It's a new technology for the industry as a whole. So, you know, as a manufacturer, we'll be releasing our own access points and things that revolve around that. But I think it's going to be a lot of getting our people up to speed and then just kind of replaying that. What's new? Why do I care? What do I need to look at? Do I need to upgrade now? Should I wait for, you know, Wi-Fi 8, or I just bought Wi-Fi 6, you know, and is 7 better? You know, all those kind of questions. And you'll kind of have a few months of the whole Groundhog Day effect, I like to say, just repetitively repeating those things out and just helping to get the word out there, right? It's just something that you have to do with new technology, is get that stuff out there and help people understand it and make the right decisions.
That makes sense. So we're moving. And so I want you to take off your hat as a PSC. You know, this is now just Sean, the guy who's been doing Wi-Fi or, you know, wireless or whatever for a long time, you know, and you talked about Wi-Fi 7. So I want to know from you, you know, what aspect of Wi-Fi 7 excites you the most, you know, because there's some new features coming out, and this is I think our third or fourth episode that we've done about Wi-Fi 7 specifically. And I always ask the same question because I've done a lot of talking about it, but I want to know from you which one of these new features or which one of the new things, what about this new Wi-Fi 7 standard excites you the most?
Honestly, it's not Wi-Fi 7 at all. It's just the 6 gigahertz, right? Which obviously is not, you know, officially not new with Wi-Fi 7. We had it in 6E, but I looked at 6E as kind of like a, I don't know what's a good word for it. Stopgap doesn't really seem like a great term. It's more of just kind of, it was easing us into a whole new spectrum, right? So we got that 6 gigahertz spectrum in 6E, but, you know, even as a manufacturer, we only did a couple APs in that realm. We're kind of easing into it, right? Wi-Fi 7 is when it's like, now, okay, it's here. We're fully embracing this. We've got all this other technology around that. But for me, the exciting thing is really starting to get some momentum on the 6 gigahertz band. Obviously here in the US, you know, where I'm based and we're all based, outside the US, there's been obviously limited uptake for it, right? I think a lot of other regulatory areas will look to the US to figure out all the junk to make it work. And then once we kind of figure it out and it's standardized, then they'll decide, okay, we're going to give you this spectrum or that spectrum or whatever. But that to me is the biggest thing because of the number of channels that it brings to the table, right? And so we'll talk about that probably a little bit later on how that affects different verticals as well. But yeah, to me, it's not really the Wi-Fi 7 standard as much as it is the really the embracing of the 6 gigahertz spectrum underneath it.
You know, for me, it's to kind of go back to what you were saying, you know, the 6E was sort of like a bridge, right? It was sort of like this bridge standard. And what, you know, what I like about Wi-Fi 7 is the idea that it's now a standard that was written with 6 gigahertz, you know, specifically there and in mind, and they were able to adjust things and change things to where Wi-Fi 7 can really incorporate, you know, what we got in 6E. And so to me, it almost feels like a marriage of, you know, when we finally get an official standard, not just, you know, 802.11ax extended into 6 gigahertz, we actually have a full standard that was written with 6 gigahertz in mind, and we're able to do that. So it's funny because you're the first person we've talked to that's actually gone to the 6 gigahertz routes. But, and I think that points to how diverse this standard is that there's, you know, we can have this, we can ask the same question to 3 or 4 different people and we get different answers, and they're all really good answers.
Yeah. And my whole thing is like, you know, there's a laundry list of all these new things, you know, the punctured transmissions and MLO and all these cool things that you get, right? And there's always all this background stuff. And most of us, even when we read the standard, it's like, okay, what does that really mean to me as an operator, right? You know, it's just all this stuff that, yes, gives us these things at the end. But the 6 gigahertz band and the additional channels, that's something that I can immediately have a conversation with an end user customer about, and they'll get it. Like, they may not get what MLO means. They may not get what the punctured transmissions mean. I mean, I still get fuzzy on it when you start looking at all those formulas with punctured transmission. It's just like, okay. So it's like you're looking at this stuff and it's like, okay, just tell me what it does. Like, what does it do? Right? Like, that's all I care about. What does it do? Right? So, and it's like, sometimes I'm like, I just read it and I'm like, I don't really know what it does. It, you know, it just doesn't make sense, because it's so deep and technical, and you have to have that stuff. And but yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, like you said, the 6 gigahertz stuff and what that means is really what excites me about Wi-Fi 7.
To put you on the spot, to kind of follow in that train of thought a little bit, let's say hypothetically we put you in front of a room full of engineers, decision makers, people who need to know about Wi-Fi 7. What would be the summary? And this could be, you know, this, I almost, and Jim will know this is the inside joke now, I almost want to call it an elevator pitch, but the last two times we asked about that, it got completely skipped over. So just put yourself in a room. You're an expert. What do we need to know? What are your, aside from 6 gigahertz, tell me about Wi-Fi 7. Why do I care about Wi-Fi 7?
So I think in a shorter piece, or I guess in a quick summary, it's what I feel is kind of completing some of the work that we started back in 6 and 6E, all around increasing the bandwidth, which is always a good thing. But along with increasing the bandwidth, it's increasing the density and how that spectrum is used, right? So now that we have additional channels and we have additional bandwidth capacity from a channel width, right, all the way up to, you know, even 320 megahertz, whether that actually happens in a real world or not is irrelevant, but you have theoretically those things. So it's like, We're finalizing all these, I say finalizing, but we're completing and getting a lot of these things to work, like the MLO stuff and things that we started back with multi-user MIMO upstream and downstream in both directions. We're getting it, all that stuff to work to make our use of the spectrum more efficient. And I think that's all driven from the fact that everything has gone wireless. You know, every time you turn on a television, you look at commercials, I think Samsung now is doing these commercials where somebody's walking through their house and they're on their mobile phone, then they're on their TV, then they're on their refrigerator, and they're like, you know, the content is moving from device to device to device. And I think that with Wi-Fi 7 and all of that, you know, because I know that I mentioned that back end technology that's happening that the end user doesn't see, and even us in the industry really don't get too involved in a general speaking. All that stuff is starting to come into place with the addition of the new spectrum, and we're getting more efficient use of all of that stuff, as well as the security enhancements and things we're getting with 7, kind of forcing up, you know, the WPA3 stuff, which has been out for a little bit. But again, you know, we get these things in earlier standards, and now we're kind of finalizing all that stuff and really putting this stuff into practice. And okay, now you got to really use this. And like it or not, it's going to force, you know, that security and those other enhancements of the Wi-Fi space in general. So I think it is a good upgrade, especially for somebody who hasn't, maybe they were holding out from 5 or 6. You know, a lot of people didn't do 6E. You know, they skipped over 6E. So I think now is the time to look at doing those upgrades. And that's going to future-proof, you know, for the next-gen devices, right? Apple's new phone supports 6E, and the new MacBooks all support it, you know, in the last release. So you're getting into that spectrum. So,
yeah. And, you know, yeah, John and I have had this conversation, and I think we even, it was our 6E versus 7 debate episode. So that kind of, so if you haven't listened to that episode, I'll drop a link in the show notes for you. But that's what John and I were sort of talking about. And we came to the same conclusion though, is like, you know, if you don't, you know, upgrade to Wi-Fi 7, you say, I'm going to wait for Wi-Fi 8, then you end up saying, hey, I'm going to not have 6 gigahertz. You know, if you haven't gotten, if you haven't done 6 gigahertz yet, you're going to end up waiting for 5 or 6 years before you get 6 gigahertz. And so while you might not have the 6 gigahertz clients today, can you say that about the next 5 to 6 years? So it's kind of that, you know, and even though we debated it, we each took, you know, different sides, I think we actually came to that conclusion in that episode of saying, hey, you know, 6 gigahertz really is that important. So that's why it's interesting that, you know, you answered that one question the way you did about saying that it was all about 6 gigahertz.
Yeah.
So that being said, what vertical or who do you see or what type of customer base do you see benefiting the most from Wi-Fi 7 and why? Why would they, you know, why would they benefit the most if they make the jump now?
So a couple. I think any place that is running some kind of, you know, what we consider density, like high density. Now, when I talk about high density, I talk about, in my mind, high density is a couple environments, stadiums, right? So any kind of stadium, you know, whether it's a big NFL stadium or an indoor arena or whatever, those stadiums obviously are highly dense. And like we mentioned before, the more and more things go to social media and everybody's going to be connected, you know, they're ordering their food and stuff without having to stand in line and then picking it up. I've been to a couple of stadiums recently where you can do that, order your concession, and then you go to the pickup line instead of having to stand in line. Right. So I think those environments are in my opinion, they are going to benefit the most from this because of that spectrum and the fact that, you know, theoretically, again, you've got 59 new channels to deal with. Right. So instead of having to do all this weird positioning and mounting with directional antennas and all this crazy stuff that we do in these high density stadiums, now you have just a huge plethora of channels that you can use to ease those deployments and designs. So that's the first one. The other one that I think that people don't necessarily associate with high density would be the hospitality market, right? So when you think about your typical hotels and our old school design where we just put an AP, you know, every so many feet down the middle of the hallway, and just the thought of that probably makes a lot of our fellow Wi-Fi engineers cringe, right? To think back to doing that. You, in a hospitality environment, channel reuse is a big concern because you're going to be putting an AP, if not in every room, every other room, right? As you go down the hallway, but you've also got to deal with up and down, not just a horizontal plane, right? So you have a high density rollout from an AP count, not necessarily from a high density of users on each AP. So I think those two environments are going to really be interested in 7 with that 6 gigahertz back in to get those additional channels and be able to do better designs, you know, more efficient usage, obviously. Enterprises, you know, will benefit more from the speed and security side of the standard than I think the 6 gigahertz piece. But that density with the spectrum is, I think, a huge thing for those specific markets.
All right.
It's good to think about it. I mean, at the end of the day, the one of the beauty parts of Sean, your experience is you've touched a lot of the different verticals, whereas Jim doesn't get to touch customers. He has a restraining order. I specifically primarily work with service providers, but I have the ability to, they dabble in a couple different verticals.
They let you touch customers?
Well, I've gone to training class, so.
you are providing a service, so it's right there in the name, hey, right? So.
Anyways, all right.
Now we derailed off on a completely, like, wait a minute, we turned in the wrong way, I think. Yeah, so that's, you know, and I've had the you know, I guess the privilege, in my opinion, since I've got into this space of just, I don't know, I don't know if it's a privilege or a curse, but it seems like I end up in the craziest things. I did a design in a defunct nuclear, I guess it was a nuclear reactor site down in South Carolina back in the day. And it was for the Department of Energy. And it was one of the original sites that made the nuclear material for the bombs we dropped in World War II. So these were like literally in the underground reactor facilities that they were trying to decommission because they had just closed the door years ago and left it there. And then they decided, wait, we need to actually decommission this thing. So we put Wi-Fi in there so that they could run voice over IP phones to communicate because they couldn't add any new cables and things like that. And so, yeah, so I've had interesting ones like that in trying to do Wi-Fi in some of these places. So I think I do have a pretty good perspective on all the different extremes of one end to the other of the spectrum, whether they're just simple somebody's house. You know, I've done a few of those in our area, high-end homes, you know, all the way to stadiums and just some of the crazy things that you try to put Wi-Fi in.
Pivoting a little bit, I have sort of two questions in my head, one of which is not on the sheet. So gotcha. So most of our listeners are engineers, we think. We're not really sure. We should do a listener survey, Jim, but that's a subject for another time.
Sounds like work.
Yeah. Oh, maybe we can get Middle to do that. Assuming most of our listeners are engineers who, like you, do design and build the networks, and then they help organizations fix anything when they go wrong. Kind of wondering, first question is, what would you specifically consider advising to look out for before making the decision to upgrade to Wi-Fi 7? I have one personally. I'm curious to see what you would suggest. And then I had a question that maybe I'll let Jim get into it, but I think we want to revisit the security thing a little bit more. But let's go with the design first.
So I guess the big thing really looks at, all right, so the decision on whether you upgrade or not, you know, like we talked about earlier, if you don't do 7, so like if you did 6E, is there a big jump to 7? That might be hard, right? If you have any kind of financial constraints, you're probably going to wait, right? Because you've kind of made the jump to the 6 gigahertz band already, and you've obviously recently invested in that. But if you're still running 6 or you're still running 5 AC Wave 2 stuff, then I think 7 is definitely the time to upgrade because we don't know how long it's going to be for your next cycle, right? So the lifetime of your devices and what I worry about, I don't want to say that this is going to happen. I don't want to be ringing the alarm bell when there may not be a problem, but I'll just kind of give you an example. I had a customer that was running AC Wave 2 or AC Wave 1 stuff. And the network's been running fine for years. No problems. They were an early adopter, went on AC Wave 1 as soon as it came out. They've had no issues. This is a small warehouse. And then all of a sudden, a year or so ago, they started having a lot of problems. And as we dug into that, there was nothing wrong with the Wi-Fi. It was the clients. They started buying newer and newer clients. And the newer clients started having trouble mixed with the old clients on the older Wi-Fi technology. When they tested from an existing device, everything worked perfect. When they get a brand new laptop, they would have just weird issues. So I do think it's a possibility that you can get to a point where your clients outpace your infrastructure. So I think with Wi-Fi 7, with all the stuff that's changed and, you know, how not only the new spectrum, because at the end of the day, if you have an old client that doesn't have 6 gig, then that client doesn't care about 6 gigahertz, right? Like he doesn't even know it exists. So that's irrelevant to them. But there's a lot of other stuff that's in the Wi-Fi 7 standard that may or may not have issues with older technology. And I remind people back with Wi-Fi 6. Remember when Wi-Fi 6 came out, not to pick on Intel, but there was Intel devices that had issues where we had to go in and turn off Wi-Fi 6 on WLANs because people had these specific Intel chips until Intel got driver updates, right? So these are the things that I kind of caution people about. And not so much that I'm cautioning anybody that you shouldn't go to 7. I'm cautioning people in the fact that you need to have a good understanding of your environment because we're about to make a pretty disruptive change into a new technology, right? It'd be like going from a gas vehicle to an all-electric vehicle. it's still a vehicle. You're still using it for the same purpose. But if you don't understand that you now have a specific range that you can go to without stopping to recharge, and you can't find a recharge place like you could before with a gas station, that's a pretty disruptive change in your habits, in my opinion. So I look at Wi-Fi 7 as being that same kind of thing, that it's good. We're moving forward. You got all these benefits. But I think engineers need to understand in a deeper sense what their environment is before they just say, okay, I'm gonna order all new Wi-Fi 7 APs, and we're just gonna pop the old ones down, put the new ones up, and roll with it, right? Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily agree that this would be one of those upgrades that you can do that.
No, and that was kind of where I was, that was the point I was holding back. That's actually made me think of one other part of that point too. Assuming that they're replacing something older than 6E, which I really don't see a lot of, I mean, I'm sure there's somebody out there that went 6E and is now going to go put in 7 because they just have to be bleeding edge. But yeah, assuming that it's been a couple generations or a generation or two, whatever. One thing first and foremost, this is not a rip and replace upgrade. If you rip and replace, or what do you do, Jim? You drop and swap, right? I think that's
pop and
right.
Pop and swap.
With, say, you're going from Wi-Fi 5 to Wi-Fi 7, you will have issues. Specifically, you will have issues with your 6E and 7 devices, because 6E or 6 gigahertz doesn't propagate the same way. You're putting a 6 gigahertz access point in a designed network for 5 gigahertz. So you will have coverage gaps. That's first and foremost. The other thing that I think a lot of people who hate switches, and I'm not talking about myself, might overlook, 6 gigahertz access points have 3 radios. They take more power. So if you haven't looked at your switch power budgets when you're doing this upgrade, you really should, because there's a good chance, in some cases at least, you're going to have switches that are powering your APs that cannot power your new APs or cannot power all of your new APs. And your comment about the EV made me think of it. I'm like, that's a good point too. Some generations you can do rip and replace and it's no big deal and the power's fine. This is not one of them. I think this is one of those where, as an engineer, I think people have to take a step back. It may be a more expensive upgrade. So maybe you're not doing everything at once, because finances obviously drive a lot of decisions, but it's also cable infrastructure support it. Can your switches support it? And do you need to add more APs and or pay for a survey to confirm how many you need? So it's a little bit more involved than just taking one down and putting one in the same spot for most people, if they want a truly, world-class, top-notch Wi-Fi experience. I'm going to take off my sales hat at that point, but those are in my head.
Yeah, I would completely agree. That the power thing, because here's the other thing that a lot of people don't realize, with RAPs, and I'll quickly take the vendor hat off, and with most modern enterprise quality APs, if you plug that access point in to a modern enterprise quality switch and it's not putting out enough power, the AP will say, you know what, I want 90 watts of power. We'll just throw that number out there, but you're only going to give me 30. Okay, fine. I'll deal with what you give me. And they'll start turning features off, right? We know that from the vendor side, but customers and IT guys at a customer site, they don't always know that, or they don't always realize the implications of that. They just see that the AP comes online and we're good to go. And then a week later, when all the kids come back or all the workers come back on Monday after an upgrade, and the performance is crap, it's slow, they're having connectivity problems, they don't, they see all the APs are online, everything is up. They may not understand that AP is up, but it's actually operating at a quarter of its potential, just as a random number, right? Because it's downgraded itself, because it doesn't have enough power to run everything at full power. So not only did you do a rip and replace in the existing spots, and now you got coverage gap already because you didn't account for a new band and things like that, but you got even more coverage, bigger coverage gaps, because you didn't account for the AP running at a quarter of its power or something like that, whatever it happens to step down to, right? So I think that's where, to your point, you really have to look at that back end infrastructure and make sure that it's going to be supported. You're probably going to get multi-gig ports on your access points. If you're buying enterprise quality APs now with Wi-Fi 7 APs, they're going to have multi-gig ports, right? So yes, you're excited. And like I talked about, having all this new bandwidth and all this great stuff, but wait a minute, why am I getting crappy performance? Because you've got a 5 gig interface funneled down into a 1 gig port, which is on a switch with a 1 gig upgrade, or maybe a 10 gig uplink, and you've got 20 access points plugged into it, right? So when you just start doing basic math, And I'm not even going to go down the whole argument about, you know, it's not synchronous, it's asynchronous and all that. Irrelevant to that, you're just jamming the potential for way more bandwidth into a pipe that wasn't designed to handle that. So I think that we definitely need to encourage people to look at those other pieces of their infrastructure more than we've done in the last couple releases.
Okay. So I want to circle back to something that you've mentioned it a couple of times in passing, and I want to go back and highlight it because I think it's something that's important that we hit on at least for a minute or two. You keep talking about security. You've said it a couple of times. What about this new standard? When you talk about the security, what exactly are you referring to?
Just like really the move to WPA3. So that WPA3 has been out there already, but now with like on the 6 gigahertz side, you can't have open SSIDs. You're kind of forcing some of those changes in that advancement. And my concern in those realms, because I spend a lot of time in warehouses and things like that, is they're notorious for old devices. Like you got a scan gun that just beep, and that's all the guy cares about. You've got a worker that just points it, beep, and as long as it makes the blip noise, he moves on. Well, those devices are notoriously bad for not getting good firmware updates and security things and stuff like that. So I think people don't necessarily take into account those other things that come along in a new technology, like not being able to run, you know, open SSIDs on those 6 gigahertz frequency bands, right? And forcing into WPA3. And without getting too much, you know, things like our DPSK technology and how we handle dealing with dynamic pre-shared keys in this new standard without completely breaking everything, right? That'll probably be something I'm sure you guys we'll talk about on a future episode as those things come out a little bit more. But I don't want to say too much and get yelled at, but that's one of the things that we're known for is the dynamic pre-shared key stuff, right? And so the way that we're able to do that in WPA3 and keep those things going. So I think that's why it gets a little bit more attention on the security side than what we have previously. Because, you know, a lot of people, it pains me to my soul that I go into networks some places and they're still running, in my opinion, even worse than open network is like WEP and other things like this. It's like, have you not read any kind of security pamphlet in the last 10 years? Why are you running WEP, right? So that those kinds of things, I think it's going to force people to make changes that they may not have thought about in the previous jumps, right? So that's really the biggest kind of reason.
Okay.
Well, on that note, I think we have one last, and this is a sort of a catch-all to kind of wrap it all up, put a pretty bow on it. So, Sean, to close this out, to take us home, if you will, what would you want to impress on our listeners? You know, what is the biggest takeaway outside of the 6 gigahertz spectrum for this latest generation of Wi-Fi? And as a shameless self-plug, why should they look to our Ruckus SEs to help them get there?
Well, our SEs have a very wide range of products that they can bring to the table, right? And I know there's big vendors, you know, that have even more stuff than we do with firewalls and some other stuff that they do. But just from a infrastructure side, our SEs can come in there and talk to you about the Wi-Fi technology and what they're, you know, the concerns that we've talked about today and benefits that they're going to get with Wi-Fi. They've also got the switching platforms with a wide range of options there that they can talk about as the conversation moves into that. But the other thing that most of our competitors can't is we've also got the physical infrastructure side from the cabling and patch panels and like all this stuff that we bring in and things like our power over fiber solutions that we get from the CommScope infrastructure side. So I think our guys are in a position with other members of our team to talk about that entire kind of evaluation. Like we've told you that there are some concerns with coverage, with infrastructure support of your switches, being able to power the APs and things like that. But what about the cables? Like, are you running 5E cables that were put in 20 years ago, right? Do you maybe need to look at now's the time to upgrade to newer physical cabling, right, into it? So I think by going to your Ruckus SE team and the people that he can bring in to bring all that stuff to bear, you know, we can look at all those types of things. There's other products that we've brought in that don't relate to, you know, Wi-Fi 7, things like the Ruckus WAN gateway and things that we can now offer that we couldn't previously. So I think it's definitely something that you want to talk to these folks about, the wider picture of your infrastructure, and not just, hey, we're looking at new APs coming in to show me the new AP, right? You know, that I think is a conversation that we need to expand on this round of upgrades, more so than we have in the past.
Okay. Thanks.
So I don't think we have anything else, Mr. Palmer.
No,
it kind of covers it.
Yeah, I think we've gotten a new and interesting perspective on this new Wi-Fi standard that's coming. Yeah,
it'll be exciting times. And I think the takeaway for me is, you know, like Sean said, make sure if you're listening to us and you're a Ruckus partner, or you're not a Ruckus partner, but you'd want to work with Ruckus, find your salesperson, find your local SE, find us at a trade show, because Lord knows we're at plenty of those. And give us a shout. We'll definitely be able to take care of you, navigate the new world of Wi-Fi 7. So Sean, I want to thank you. Mr. Palmer, I don't know if you have any closing comments. If not, we'll wrap it up.
No, I'm good.
All right.
Thank you guys.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you guys.
We'll see everybody on the next episode.